Blog Talk Radio.
To Watford, three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! And Indiana wins the ball game. Christian Watford with a three.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
This is Indiana. Yeah, we do it big. Boston on the big ten. You know what it is.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of the Assembly Call as a season on the drink continues today. With Indiana's loss to Michigan State, the final score ended up being 73-56. Indiana was competitive early in the first half. A late run by Michigan State made it 33-24 at halftime. And an early run by the Spartans in the second half pushed them out to a double-digit lead that they never really relinquished. I think Indiana might have gotten it to 9 once or twice in the second half, but the Hoosiers never really threatened and were defeated quite soundly at home in quite the disappointing loss. I'm your host, Jared Morris, here. I will be joined by Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips here momentarily, and we will break down this game for you. And before we start delving into some of the negatives, and there are several of them today, I think it behooves us to focus on the positive. And to me, the main positive, there are really two positives today from Indiana's game. Number one was the play of Will Sheehy in the second half. I thought he really stepped up and did his part, knocking down some threes, really hustling. He ended up with 13 points total, and I thought really tried to lead this team. I don't think this team was really ready to follow and against this kind of opponent, maybe not able to follow, but I thought Will did a good job. And, of course, Stan Robinson finished with 11 points. He was 5 of 9, 4 boards, 2 assists, and really, you know, the only thing that even kept this game within some kind of reasonable reach in the second half was the clear it out for Stan offense. And, you know, he scored 4 straight points and, had another pass to Will and really was – about the only thing we had in the half court that was able to threaten Michigan State at all. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that I would like to see Stan starting in Indiana's next game at Penn State. We'll see if that happens. Really, in terms of the positives, that might sum it up. There are many negatives. We will get to a lot of them because this is a very disappointing day in Hoosier land. You can make whatever excuses you want for this team, but this program is past 17-point home losses, and that's the bottom line, is today Indiana lost at home in the Assembly Hall by 17 points, and I don't care who you bring in here and how young the team is and whatever excuse you want to make, that's unacceptable. We're supposed to be past that. Tom Crean said it in his opening press conference. It's Indiana. It's Indiana, the absolute pinnacle of college basketball. Well, Indiana doesn't lose at home by 17 points when it's Indiana. So with that being said, let me turn it over to my co-host now, let them get their initial thoughts out, and then we will have a verbal battle about this game and break it all down. I'll go to Andy first, and then we'll bring Ryan on. Andy, give me your bottom line on today's IU loss.
Boy, I don't know. I was trying to think, too, about something positive as we got started, but I think you took anything positive that I would have come up with. I mean, again, I kind of tweeted stuff toward the end of the game. This is not a game I expected IU to win. It's not a game I expected them to win before the season. It's not a game I expected them to win after the way they had played. so far, but the way they lost, where essentially in the second half for the vast majority of it, we were just non-competitive, was pretty disappointing. And I think it was all around. I mean, I harped a lot on this team's struggles offensively and what they're attempting to do in the half court. The defense was just as bad in the second half. I mean, felt like layup after layup, and whoever on Michigan State wanted to get a shot, they could get it. You know, again, I kind of go back to what I talked about at the end of the last show. What happens is this team faces more adversity and other things go wrong. Because, again, you saw it tonight. It's these flurries. It's not one bad play. One bad play leads to four more. And it just is astounding that at this point in the season, just unable to kind of turn the momentum back the other way. There was one stretch in particular where it was, you know, Williams took a bad three, gave up a layup on the other end. IU makes a turnover. Michigan State hits a three. Hollow makes an offensive foul. I mean, those things were right after one another. And there's just no kind of rudder or whatever you want to say on this team right now that is able to pull it out of those kinds of mini tailspins. And those things just allow games to get away from them. And that was really when the one part in the second half led up to that where you actually felt like, okay, maybe they're going to make a game of it where they scored 7 points in a row, cut the lead from 15 to 8, I think, and then it was, you know, a series like that, and then it was just never really close after that. So that wasn't intended to be positive, so I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression that I was trying to be positive there. It's quickly swirled into negative territory, but I just really, there's just not too much positive to say at this point. I think we're, you know, we're 15 games into a season, and I have no idea if this team's, I have no idea what this team's identity is. I can't point to specific things that over the season it's gotten markedly better at. And as a result, there are no good wins to show for it. So, you know, here we are, and with a week left on what should be a fairly tough road trip out to Penn State. So certainly no shortage of things to work on with a long week of practice ahead. So there's a positive. I'll end on that.
All right. And in what may be the last positive comment of the day, let's go to Ryan for his opening rant.
No, it's not going to be positive. I'm gonna rip on our prized freshman, Noah Vonley, a little bit today. I think that this is a game where we really needed him to step up. And I just thought that the combination of Adrian Payne and Matt Costello just absolutely manhandled Vonley. And over the last few games, his competition has improved. Or, you know, in the games where competition has gotten better, Vonley has completely disappeared offensively. And, you know, if you read the message boards or the comment sections at places like Inside the Hall, you hear people saying, well, Kareem never draws up any plays to give Vonley the ball, and that's like a huge complaint of people. And if you actually watch our offensive sets, there's plenty of opportunities for him to get open. And, you know, there's cross screens and down screens and things like that where he is open on the side where he's cutting to the side where the ball is. And he's just not getting open. I mean, he's not using his body. He's not getting himself in a good position to receive a pass. And, you know, you see that is there is an opportunity for him to get himself in a spot where he can get the ball and demand the ball, and he just isn't. And most of that is the fact that he's an 18-year-old kid going up against guys who are 3 years older than him and getting out-muscled and thrown around and things like that. But, you know, at some point he's got to step up. If he wants to be, you know, a lottery pick, as most people are talking about him now and things like that, he wants to be the go-to guy on this team, he's got to, like, actually do something when he gets, you know, in position in the post. And at times even his own teammates are kind of telling him, like, hey, get open. We're trying to get you the ball. And he's just not, and he's getting tossed around. And tonight, or today, he got knocked down three or four times by Payne, just shouldered and fell right to the court. And at other times, he was just completely bumped out of the lane. I mean, so he's really got to grow up at some point physically and just decide that, you know, he's this huge, incredibly talented guy, and he needs to assert himself more. And I think that is a big problem, because if we don't have those easy baskets in the paint, it's going to be really hard to score in the half court, because everybody's just going to stay out on the shooters.
Yeah, and it was especially disappointing considering how he played against Illinois, because I thought he really was assertive against Illinois. And early on, he made a couple of threes. I know he didn't make any field goals against Illinois, but he was fouled and got to the line and was just generally in the game more. And again, today, you know, you look at him, you know, the most talented guy in our starting lineup, the guy that people project as an NBA lottery pick, had fewer shots than anybody in the starting lineup today. I mean, that's kind of where we are. You know, Yogi took 11 shots, Troy took 6, Will took 6, Jeremy took 5, and Noah Vonleh takes 4 shots. You know, he did get 9 rebounds, and you know, but I thought at the beginning of the game that he and Yogi had to play like all Big Ten players, like they did against Illinois on the road for Indiana to win. And that to me was really disappointing today because, you know, at home, and I did, of course I don't expect 30 points from Yogi, and he did end up with 17. And you really look at this game, and Yogi and Will probably did enough to win today in certain respects, but really just no one else joined them except for Stan. So there are a lot of different directions to go in. I want to go in this direction first, and then we'll go in some of the other ones. And I want to start with Andy. And let's talk a little bit about Stan Robinson. Because as we move forward, something's got to change, right? This team is struggling with turnovers. This team is struggling in the half court. This team is struggling with long offensive droughts. And I think Stan Robinson showed today and has shown in spurts in the past that – you know, while Indiana doesn't have a lot of great outside shooting in the half court, you know, what they need to be able to do, you know, is, number one, hopefully get some buckets in the post with Noah Vonleh, but also be able to penetrate, use their quickness and driving ability, you know, at least of guys like Yogi and someone like Stan, to kind of break things down in the half court. And I thought that it was great to see Stan able to do that in the half court. So, Andy, let me go to you. And, you know, is that something that can really help Indiana moving forward? And is there any reason, do you see any reason why he is not in the starting lineup in the next game at Penn State?
I mean, I certainly would. I think there has to be some kind of change, and he seems like the most logical one to make. So I would agree with that. I think, you know, the one thing that you look at with him is exactly what you said, his willingness and aggressiveness to try to break people down off the dribble, because – more often than not in this game, that's what the half-court offense devolved into. Whether by design or not, the reality was that very few times on the pass was a team able to get the ball inside the three-point line. I don't know that I can torture myself to a point to go and actually look at that, but it felt like in the half-court offense, possession after possession, where the ball did not get passed inside the three-point line. And he was the one that seemed most likely and most willing to, you know, really drive it in there. And I think you're going to see errors because of his aggressiveness. He made just an awful outlet pass, you know, being overly aggressive on the closeout with Harris and kind of fiery in that whole, you know, five-point sequence there. But at this point with this team, I think those are the kinds of things you have to live with, because the potential reward for that risk is worth it with him. Because he just seems so much more aggressive than everybody else. And I think if you're able to do that and let him play with the ball in his hands a bit more, it also takes a little pressure off of Yogi, and that, you know, maybe he doesn't have to handle the ball quite as much. So I definitely felt like he was a spark. And if the reality is for this team is going to be that they're not able to really generate much off of half-court sets, then you have to have people like that out there on the floor that are going to be able to break things down when the shot clock gets, you know, late in that situation. So I definitely felt like he was a positive. He's certainly not afraid to mix it up, and certainly at this point a guy you feel like you got to see more of.
All right, and Brian, give us your thoughts on Stan, too.
I just think, and I thought this since early in the season, once he sort of got back into the rotation, I believe he was banged up to start the season, if I'm not mistaken, and he just sort of started finding his way into the rotation. And I remember saying on one of the calls that I thought if there was any candidate off the bench to move into the starting lineup, it was him, because of all the things he does, you know, his aggressiveness. Again, like Andy said, he threw that horrible outlet pass, but that's a freshman. And I think that along with him, he's a sort of a microcosm of this entire team. Is they're young. Some of them aren't very aggressive. He is. But they're going to make gigantic mistakes. That's just what happens when you have freshmen and sophomores. There's no amount of coaching that can take that away. It's just going to happen until they're used to the speed, until they're used to the physicality, until they're used to, you know, going against guys that are so much bigger and older than them. And I think Stan, you know, showed today a flash of, like, some serious confidence. I don't know if that'll be sustained because, again, freshmen are up and down. And maybe next game he comes out and he's just not aggressive and, you know, questions himself too much and doesn't do that. But I thought he was at times the best player on the floor for Indiana today on both ends of the floor. And, yeah, that we definitely need someone like that. I tweeted that I thought he was the straw that was stirring the drink today, and I think that against Penn State, it would be a great chance to give him, you know, if he doesn't start, I think starting is, people always talk about being a starter and things like that. I think it's minutes played is more important, and I think that, you know, I would be surprised if he wasn't one of our top 5 minutes guys against Penn State. He really deserves it, and I think he earned a lot of that today.
Well, and look, you know, part of the problem with this team is, and Ryan, it gets to your point of it being a young team, is we don't, and certainly the coaching staff doesn't know what to expect from game to game, right? Like, we know that Yogi is going to be aggressive and score points. We've seen that. You know, we know – what else do we know? We know Devin Davis is going to hustle and get rebounds. He had 6 of them today. We know that Jeremy Hollowell dribbling is never good. You know, we know that Will is going to play his butt off, hustle on defense, and dive for loose balls even when he doesn't have a chance just because that's Will Sheehy. I honestly think one of the few things that we know that we can kind of bank on is that when Stan Robinson gets in the game, he's going to at least try and make things happen. You know, he's going to take it to the hole. He's going to, you know, go do things, and they're not always good, but he's a catalyst for things. And I think too often we have guys standing around. You know, they show Clark Kellogg talked about this a lot on the game where the ball would go into the post and guys are just standing. You know, we see, you know, it's okay for Christian Watford to stand outside the three-point line. It's not okay for Troy Williams to just stand out there calling for the ball outside the three-point line. He's not a three-point shooter, right? And so at least with Stan, I feel like you at least kind of know what you're going to get, you know, and he's going to take it to the bucket. He's going to make some things happen, and hopefully more of them are going to be good than are bad. But I think I speak for a lot of people, and obviously I think you two guys agree that he needs to be playing more. Okay, I want to talk about the Johnny Marlin thing in the second half because, frankly, it had me really incensed, and that's why I didn't want to start with it. But, Andy, before we get to that, I know you had some thoughts on Noah Vonleh that you wanted to share. So let's get to that first, and then let's talk about some of the lineup decisions in the second half because I have some hot opinions on those.
All right. I'll keep it brief. I don't want to keep you at bay. But, you know, one thing I did watch with Vonleh, and it's a lot of what Ryan said, was, you know, after we talked a little bit about that after the last game and his ability to really establish position down low, and so I tried to, you know, pay special attention to that today, and I'm not sure there were hardly any times, certainly you could count on one hand, probably on a couple fingers, how many times he was really able to get position even within a foot of the paint. You know, those guys, you know, Payne and Costello were really riding him out of there. And if he's going to do that, then the problem that comes then is he used this a little bit at the start of the game. He tried to face up and, you know, use some of his ability off the dribble, and it was effective initially. But the problem is his team doesn't shoot the ball well enough and doesn't have good enough spacing to actually allow for that. And then he ends up dribbling or trying to spin, and there's always somebody else right there because opponents aren't going to respect IU's outside shot, and despite the fact they hit 50% from three again today. And it's made that much easier by the fact, you know, most of the guys on the floor tend to stand around as soon as Noah gets the ball. But he just, you know, he really struggled to do that. And then at least at one point in the second half, you know, Yogi set a screen and really freed up a little space. They got him the ball, and I think he ended up getting fouled. But after that, they tried to do something similar, and he really didn't do a good job of using the screen either. You know, really didn't get close enough to him. And so Adrian Payne just ran right around the screen. He wasn't, you know, didn't really use it to his advantage to be able to create even a sliver of space so they can try to get on the ball. So I do agree with what Ryan said. I think the coaches are trying to do things to get him the ball, but I think he has to figure out, you know, ways to do a lot of things different in terms of creating that space, using the screens that people are setting, because other than that, there's not too many other ways he's going to be able to get the ball. So one of those two things has to happen, and I tweeted at one point about screening for him, and I did see them attempt to do that more with a little success, but not consistent success. So I think that's something to continue to watch for with him. I know it was always a conversation with Zeller about people's ability to get him the ball, but I would kind of encourage people, you know, the next game, watch for a few possessions as he tries to post up, and does he really get an established position? I mean, it's one thing he can be in the lane, but is he able to hold the guy off for any period of time? And from what I looked at today, by and large, that isn't the case with him right now, which is a factor of him being young. But it's not all on coaches or other players at times if you think he's not getting the ball enough. There's certainly a component that he needs to do a little bit better job in some of those facets as well.
Some interesting stats. Dustin Dvorak just tweeted out Troy Williams and Jeremy Hollowell combined 47 minutes, 2 for 11 from the field, 8 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers. This one's interesting. I haven't fact-checked it yet, but from Jason G. Brewer, games with 6 field goal attempts or fewer. Julius Randle, Andrew Wiggins, and Jabari Parker, 0. Noah Vonleh, 10 straight games, which... And as I kind of look at Noah Vonleh's page here on ESPN.com, it doesn't look like he certainly hasn't had more than 6 field goal attempts in the last 5 games, and he makes up for that with getting to the free throw line. But I think, you know, what you guys say is very true. And I think Indiana is really going to struggle when Noah is not playing like an all-Big Ten type player. I mean, we saw in Illinois, I think the team really exceeded my expectations against Illinois. And I think in large part it was because Yogi and Noah played great. They played like all Big Ten players. And I think today they really, you know, we played a lot worse today than I thought we were going to. I really expected a win. And maybe that was unreasonable, but I at least expected competitiveness. And part of it is because you got to get more from Noah, and I even think more from Yogi. And you also need more from the coaching staff. And it's time that we need to address this because – you know, in the second half, look, I'm all for making a point with your lineups, you know, like Tom Crean did when he started Jeff Howard over Jeremy Hollowell, and Hollowell responded, and obviously Howard isn't a rotation player, and so that's going to make a point. Well, it's a 10-12 point game. There are 12 minutes left here. It's a home game in Assembly Hall against a number 5 team in the country. This is a place where so much magic has happened. And the game is not, you know, we've made a couple runs. We've gotten it to 8-9 points, and Johnny Marlin comes in the game. There's nothing against Johnny Marlin. The guy plays his butt off every time he goes in there. But he's 5'10". It's not like he's ever proven he can make shots. It's not like, almost even like Daniel Moore, it's not like he's proven he can really get assists and kind of get guys into the game. He's really done nothing to earn any playing time. Not to mention that, he's playing with 2 other guards who were 6 feet because he was playing with Yogi and Evan Gordon at the time. And I look at that, just watching the game as a fan, and it looks to me like a give-up move. That's what it looks like to me. It was really frustrating to see. And it has nothing to do with Johnny Marlin, because if he puts Peter Jerkin in, who's 7 feet tall, it's the same thing. So it doesn't have anything to do with that. It's a guy that hasn't earned minutes in a really, really big game at a point where, hey, you're 1 5-6 point run away from getting the crowd into it, and who knows what can happen. You know, are we going to win? I don't know. Maybe not. But I don't understand that, especially at that point in the game. I don't – and I don't know if either one of you guys can explain the rationale for that move to me. I don't get it. And I wonder, as a player looking at that move, what you think about that. Because this is – look, this is a team that's mentally fragile right now. This is the first Tom Crean team – that hasn't been able to at least meet or exceed expectations. And you can say that last year's team, you know, did meet the expectations of our number one team, but they won the Big Ten in the regular season. They won a lot of big games. That team was ready for the expectations. And this team really isn't. You know, they're not experienced enough. They're not smart enough yet. They haven't gelled enough yet to meet the expectations of the fan base. And now you're looking at it and you're saying, you know, it's a 10-12 point game against number 5 team in the country at home, and what are we doing here with these lineups? So I want to hear from you guys. We'll go to Ryan first. Andy, I want to get your thoughts, but I'm telling you that move incensed me because it just didn't make sense. To me, it was not the right time for a prove-a-point type move, and I don't know what other reason you play a guy like that in that spot. So, Ryan, let's get your thoughts, and then Andy, we'll go to you.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the move either, but I know for a fact that Crean has been saying he wants to rest Yogi more minutes because he's been exhausted and making bad decisions at the end of games. And so he wants to consciously work in more, you know, in the flow of the game, work in more chances to pull him out, give him a couple minute rest and put him back in because he's doing so much for the team. And frankly, I agree with that because I think at times – Yogi does look exhausted, or has looked exhausted, and has made bad decisions in key games so far this season. As far as putting Johnny Marlin in, it might be that through practice, Crean is most confident with him as a ball handler, since we don't have really a lot of pure ball handlers on the team. And Evan Gordon has shown, you know, to be able to do it occasionally, but he's not a phenomenal ball handler that can bring the ball up. I'm not saying Marlon is, but I'm thinking maybe in practice he's distinguished himself as a guy who can come in and, you know, maybe handle the ball a little bit while Yogi's on the bench. I'm not a fan of the move, but at the same time, I don't know what's going on with the team behind the scenes. I don't know if maybe this is the best they've got to bring the ball up, you know, in certain situations. A lot of people were high on Marlon when he transferred as a walk-on because they'd seen him play at, what was the IPFW before, and had really liked him. So, I don't know what Crean's doing there, but he's certainly a better ball handler on the perimeter and bringing the ball up than, say, Stan Robinson is right now, or someone like Devin Davis, Davis is basically a forward, but Davis or Troy Williams or one of those guys bringing the ball up. So I think that might be a big factor in it, just because we don't have another pure point guard on the roster. So, but yeah, I don't know what he's doing, but at the same time, I think it's kind of a situation also where they're willing to try anything to provide a spark, and if that's Johnny Marlon, that's Johnny Marlon.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe that's the sad state of affairs for where we are. You know, that's what you have that's what you think you have to do to provide a spark. You know, and I do agree with you with Yogi getting a rest, but that was my biggest problem with it. If you're going to do it, then don't do it with Evan Gordon and Yogi on the floor at the same time. I mean, that's three guys 6 foot or smaller against a lineup against Michigan State that has four NBA players in Payne, Appling, Dawson, and Harris. So like even if you can argue for the move, kind of, like, still the execution of it was really poor, I thought. Anyway, Andy, your take.
I thought there's no real plausible explanation. If it's just I'm trying anything, then that says I don't have any idea what to do and I'm just throwing darts to try to make things happen. That's not good. If it's I felt like he could help us win the game, then why in the hell did he play 1 minute combined in the other four big games that we've had? If you want to look at the four losses, were kind of the four big games. Played 1 minute combined. He doesn't strike me, and this is the same issue I had with the Jeff Howard thing. He doesn't strike me as a guy who is going to have played any harder in practice this last week than he has all year. So if you want to reward him for practice time, then reward him and let him play. And if he's coming in to be a ball handler, then why didn't he come in the first half when you took Yogi out? Like, to me, it's just a... oh, well, what the hell? Let's see what he can do. When at that point in the game, you know what he's going to do. He's not going to look at the basket. There's no reason to believe that he would. And so I just don't understand. And if we want to, you know, send messages or do whatever, then do it. But don't pick your spots and do stuff like this. Or, you know, Ryan, I know you made a comment on Twitter about Vonleh being out because he wasn't playing well. I'm all for it. That's fine. But don't pick your spots and do it and then shove Hollowell back out there when he hasn't done anything. And I honestly, you know, I just, if you want to hold people accountable and do things like that, then absolutely, then do it the whole game, do it to everybody, do whatever. I don't even know if that's really what this was. That's the thing I think that's frustrating as you look at it is that, but, you know, be consistent with that. If you want to bench Vonleh because he's not playing hard enough or working hard enough to get positioned, great. Then bench Hollowell for taking every time he takes a three or, you know, or something like that. That's where I start to get frustrated, as is probably obvious by the tone of my voice. You know, I don't care if you want to do that. I'm all for that kind of thing because I think that at hopefully with the young team kind of reinforces what you're looking for. But I don't see that being done consistently. So then that's what makes you scratch your head when you see him come into the game because there's really no logical explanation for it, and then you sit there after the game and you really, you know, he came in, he didn't really do anything. It didn't set up anybody else. He couldn't guard anybody. The ones that he tried to foul Gary Harris in the open court, he couldn't even catch up with him to foul him. So I think that was probably as telling for me as anything. He's got a breakaway. He's really trying to foul him on purpose from behind. He couldn't even catch him. So,
yeah, that was really That was really, really bad. My dad and I were watching the game, and I was just like, I just turned to my dad and I just said, "Really?" And he was just shaking his head. I mean, it was such an inept attempt to foul him in the open court.
Yeah. So, okay, Andy, let me ask you this. Here, if you want some kind of humorous irony, so let's go back Andy, think about this team pre-Big Ten. If I just asked you, give me the number one weakness of Indiana, what would you have said? Number one weakness.
Pre-Big Ten? I mean, I would definitely have said turnovers.
Okay, number two weakness.
So many to pick from. Perimeter shooting could probably be another.
Okay.
And I know where you're going to
go
with this because they're like lightning.
Yes, because, okay, if you had said, okay, look, Indiana, through their first couple games, I mean, what are we shooting? We shot 40-some% against Illinois. We shoot 5 of 10 today. You think, okay, the team starts making some threes. They're good to go. Our turnover numbers, they were horrible against Illinois. They were a little bit better today, although part of that was pace, and so the percentage was still kind of poor, but it was at least a little bit better. You think, damn, okay. So we finally started making threes, and it really hasn't changed anything. And here's part of the reason, Andy, you and I were tweeting about this during the game, is I thought there were two things in the half-court offense that I thought really killed this team. And, I think Stan Robinson actually was able to kind of take advantage of them and kind of turn them into positives for that short spurt in the second half. But I thought, number one, Michigan State came out with a great game plan of attacking our dribblers. And they know that we're weak dribblers, especially guys like Hollowell, guys like Troy. When those guys put the ball on the floor, even Noah, they're prone to giving it up, And I think if there were going to be a GIF that would kind of – an animated GIF that would explain the season, it would be Jeremy Hollowell taking a couple dribbles kind of to the basket, getting stripped, and then you see the reverse shot of him kind of diving back for the ball, but it going the other way. And we saw that again today. And Indiana had that 9-5 lead. The crowd's really into it. It's going crazy. And then, in that first kind of 5-6 minute period, we literally just gave them 6 easy points, 3 just breakaway baskets on stupid, simple passes or just dribbling it into the guy. And so I thought Michigan State had us really well scouted because they attacked our dribblers, which is great. And then in the half-court offense, we kept getting bunched up. And our half-court offense hasn't been great this year, but sometimes we've at least had good spacing. And I thought really today, especially in the first half, our spacing was just awful. I mean, there'd be times where there'd be 3 guys, bunched up together, and you don't know who's setting the screen. And there's, 2 guys down in the corner almost together. And it just killed us. And I think in the second half it got a little bit better, and Stan was able to mitigate some of it because of the aggressiveness of Michigan State against the dribbler he was able to take advantage of. But, Andy, give me some of your thoughts just on that kind of from – as we look at more the macro level from a strategic perspective. I mean, it looks like this team, and I realize the opponent, look, this is a national championship caliber opponent, and so, we're not always going to be playing guys with this much talent and size and ability, and so it won't always look this bad. But, man, especially in the first half, the half-court offense just really, it didn't just look bad. It looked inept and like it didn't really have a clue. Andy, and I want to get your thoughts on that specifically, because that's something that has got to fix itself if we're going to win games going forward.
I mean, there's nothing really other to say than to agree. I think that there are a couple of times where guys get the ball, you got 2 guys standing next to each other in the corner, and any kind of spacing problems are just exaggerated when you can't really keep people honest on the outside. And so, If you at least had, there's just not enough shooters that really can draw everything out, and that's just magnified when you don't have good spacing outside of that, because everybody's just right on top of each other. You have those things like I talked about with Vonleh, or like you talked about with Hollowell, where, everybody's packed in so tight, you don't have room to, do some kind of spin dribble or whatever. There's always 1 or 2 guys waiting for you because everybody's sagging off shooters, even if you don't have, or guards rather, even if you don't have, even if you have good spacing, there's just not a lot of room to operate. And so in the absence of that, you've got a bunch of people who are standing around that further compounds the issue as well, where at least if you dump it into Vonleh, at least give him a chance to make a pass to somebody cutting toward the basket. And it just felt like in half-court situations, like I said, I can recall very few times where they were really able to pass inside the 3-point line. And that really begs the question of what does this team need to do from a tempo, from press, from whatever kind of standpoint, how do they dictate the tempo to people? Because if they can't get people out and really playing fast and frazzled and frenetic, I don't know how they're able to score enough points to beat anybody, because
you're going to open yourself up to that. And I threw out the question about the press, and then they put it on for possession, and the guy got an uncontested dunk. So maybe that's the answer. But, I mean, it really, the times that this team flourished in this game was in transition, which is somewhat obvious, you know, given, you know, everything we've watched with this team. But there has to be some kind of effort to how they push the tempo, because I think that's the other reason I really like Robinson in there, is he's so aggressive and he tries to make things happen. This team is not going to beat anybody in a half-court, you know, slug it out type of scenario right now. And if they're not going to do it right now, they're probably not going to do it by the end of the season. So to me, the focus needs to shift to how do we speed people up? How do we get the game to be played at our pace? Because when it is, I think there's at least the puncher's chance of, you know, being able to do some things, at least generate excitement, get some momentum. You get a, you know, a Troy Williams dunk. You get a Yogi three-pointer in transition. Those are some of the things that are possible outcomes there, you know, to get in a half court and dribble around and then hope somebody can break somebody down off the dribble. Is not going to cut it for this team. And it's not a lost cause at this point, but you're halfway through the season. I think it's probably smarter to focus on how we force the tempo than how we get significantly better in the half court.
All right, Andy, I agree with everything. I know Ryan does too, so he doesn't have a follow-up here. I know you only have a few more minutes with us, so let me give you this floor now to give your final thought, and then Ryan and I will spend a little time kind of resetting, taking a macro look and looking at where this team is and, goodness gracious, where they can go forward with a week off and then at Penn State followed by a Tuesday matchup at home against Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say a lot of the same things I said after the Illinois game, although probably in a more disappointed way. But, you know, the schedule is not kind. You've got a week to try to figure out a whole lot of things before you go to Penn State. And if you lose that game and you come home to face a team that, obviously the team is young. There's not a lot of guys on this team who have experienced a lack of success against Wisconsin, but a guy who, you know, or a team that Crean really hasn't, you know, been able to figure out, you got an 0-4 start staring you in the face. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this team responds to that kind of pressure, in what is not really a must win game against Penn State by any means, but, it kind of feels like it to me from the outside looking in. And, I'll be interested to see how they react. I'm interested to see what kinds of changes are made, if we do see, you know, a change to Stan Robinson being there. And again, I kind of echo what I said before. I'm all about the accountability and really trying to reinforce guys who are playing well and guys who aren't. And to me, that means Robinson needs to play more and a guy like Howell needs to play less. And I haven't seen the minutes numbers, but Devin Davis had 6 rebounds. Well, some of that was kind of garbage time toward the end, but I did think he was active and effective in the first part of the game that he was there. So, you know, if that's what we're going to do, let's go all in on that and figure that out. And, you know, a lot to work on. I'm interested to see how Vonleh responds and see if they try anything different to get him the ball and how he's better able to use some of the screens inside. But that's really you know, we're starting to see some of the same things. I think that concerns me the most at this point in the season. You know, we can talk about, I think you guys had an exchange about this, and I was getting ready to tweet the same thing. You know, we can talk about who we lost to and how we lost, and, you know, if you want to take those losses in a vacuum and say those in and of themselves are explainable or understandable or whatever it is, the reality for me at this point of the season is I haven't beaten anybody, and I don't feel like I've seen any appreciable development and improvement from what they've been even a month ago or the beginning of the season ago to where they are now. And that is what really scares the hell out of me as you start to go into some of these other games. And I feel like it's going to get worse before it gets better. But I hope I'm wrong about that. There's certainly a chance for a team to rebound and hopefully they have a good week of preparation and are ready to go. But there's a lot of things that need to change and a lot of things that need to get turned around if they're going to, you know, be able to really push for a tournament bid and kind of turn around the way that most fans are feeling at this point. So maybe that gloom and doom is a good segue into you guys trying to, you know, reset the season so far. Not really
okay.
Our purpose,
it is.
But it might
it
be.
Is. It is, Andy. Okay, before you leave real quick, I just thought about this while you were talking. So I'm assuming, I mean, you're obviously a Cincinnati fan. I'm assuming you're a Bengals fan, and your Bengals are facing Ryan's San Diego Chargers. I believe that game is tomorrow.
That game is tomorrow, but I live in Cincinnati, and I'm an Eagles fan, so I have a chance to at least have my day.
I at least have a chance for my day to be redeemed tonight if they can play well. So no additional heat between Ryan and I on this over the Bengals start to game. So.
Well, let me just tell you that as a 49ers fan, I'm rooting for the Saints so that if the 49ers are able to get past Green Bay, they don't have to go to Seattle.
Oh, well, that's fair. Now, I will say if somehow they could play the game on Tuesday, they may have another ice bowl on their hands between the Bengals and Chargers. It's supposed to get in the highs and the negatives here in the next couple of days. So
Damn. Tomorrow
I don't think it should be as bad. So they might luck out a little bit in that regard.
That's crazy. All right, Andy. Well, hey, thanks for your time, man. Enjoy your Saturday, and we will talk to you next Saturday after the Penn State game, unless we decide to bring up a special edition this week.
All right, cool, guys. Talk to you then.
All right, man. Have a good one. All right, Ryan, let's talk, man, because here's my biggest fear, right? And I agree with you. It's time now to, you know, this game is over. It was a disaster and whatever. It is what it is. It just kind of magnified a lot of the problems that we've seen. So let's kind of take the reset, you know, and this team is 10-5 overall. They're 0-2 in the Big Ten Conference. They don't have a marquee win, but here's my biggest problem. You know, we've talked a lot about this team not having a marquee win. My biggest fear now is us becoming not a marquee win. You know, it used to be that, you know, beating Indiana, that's something that goes on your resume. Well, you know, at what point is that really not even important this year, right? And part of my fear is that, you know, the first few years of the Crean era, you know, obviously those teams were not ready to compete, not at all. But it really felt like the bottom kind of fell out in February. You remember that the first couple of years, you know, before,
yep.
Probably before Oladipo's freshman year, maybe even his freshman year. I'd have to go back and look, but you know, the team at least really seemed to compete and play hard. And, kind of, you know, they were kind of in some games. They didn't expect them to be. And then February, it just kind of fell apart. And, I try and stay as positive as I can about this team. And the last couple of years, I've always had that positive sense because you just believed. You know, you knew you had guys, you know, you had the guys who had been through the wars like Hulls and Watford. And then you had guys like Oladipo and Sheehy who just, it seemed like their swagger and their will would help keep you from anything kind of falling apart. I don't have that sense yet from this team. And, you know, it really scares me, you know, at Penn State, then at home against Wisconsin. You know, certainly the team is capable of beating Penn State, and I do think it's a must-win. I'm certainly not expecting a win against Wisconsin, although I'd like for it to at least be competitive. But, you know, this team just seems like it's teetering. You know, we haven't beaten anybody to hang our hats on, and, you know, we had a chance today, and we couldn't stay in the game, you know. Give me some reasons to, and give everybody some reasons to have some optimism. I know you said in our little private chat that you're still looking to March for this team. Well, you know, it's now early January. March is coming up, and there are less and less opportunities now for this team to kind of improve itself. So give us some reasons to stay with this team, to stay positive that things are going to turn around in a good direction.
Well, I think you still have to look at the fact that, and we always come back to this, you know, 10, now it's 10 with Luke Fisher gone, 10 freshmen and sophomores playing significant minutes. Guys, you know, Yogi is considered a guy with experience on this team. Will Sheehy, who's always been up and down, is the veteran, and so he's not exactly a guy you can rely on consistently to provide smart play, although I love his heart and effort. You know, he's not the guy that you rely on to sort of lead guys and to be smart and things like that. So you just have to understand that a young team, it takes time. Not every young team is the Kentucky team that won the national title the other, you know, a few years ago. It takes time for these guys to just get used to not being in high school anymore and not being the biggest, fastest, strongest, best player on the floor every time they step out there. It takes time to get used to have teammates that you can rely on, because usually these guys who go to Division I schools are so far beyond their teammates that they can't even rely on them, you know, and they feel like they need to do everything. And now you're with equals, and you've got to figure out how to share the ball and figure out, you know, where to position yourself defensively and all of these things. I mean, it's just a completely different game. And if you look at the losses we've had, and Andy said, you can, you know, if you take them, you know, one at a time or whatever, it looks different. But, you know, we lost by 1 point against UConn. because Shabazz Napier had an insane finish to that game. There's really nothing you could do about that. We lost to Illinois in overtime on the road, a game that we could have won with a little smarter play. Lost to Notre Dame by 7 in a game that, you know, if a few turnovers go the other way, it's a win. And then you lose to Syracuse and Michigan State, who could very well play for the national championship. So while those are 5 losses and they're against the 5 best teams we've played, 3 of them we were very much in the game and could have possibly should have won. But again, the youth factor, inexperience, making bad decisions with the basketball, not being where you're supposed to be on offense because you just haven't had the reps that teams with juniors and seniors have had. You know, it's not where the offense is. You're thinking about where you're supposed to be instead of just instinctively being where you're supposed to be. Those things only come with experience, and this team is short on experience. And so it's, again, I understand people's frustration, especially coming off 2 fantastic seasons where we had players we felt we could rely on at all times and things like that. But you always have to have the realistic view of things. And this is an insanely young team that is doing insanely young team things. It's what you should expect. The turnovers, the missed shots, the bad positioning on offense, things like that happen. Now, do they need to get better and do they need to show improvement? Absolutely. We need to start seeing that over the next few weeks, certainly. But we've always said since the beginning of the season the team is going to look different in March than it did early in the season. And I still think it will. Because with experience, you just get better. You just do. It's not even necessarily, you know, our coach is doing a great coaching job or anything like that, though I hope they do. But just the experience of playing will make them better. And hopefully we see that. And hopefully it's not too late. It might be too late with this team. Maybe we don't make the tournament. I personally have always thought that we would. But maybe we won't make the tournament. Maybe the Big Ten is just too tough for this team right now. But again, I think it's just people have to always, with this team, take a step back and look at it for what it is. So that's just where I'm
okay.
at with it.
And look, and you bring up some good points about this team, right? This team in a vacuum. Now, here's my counter to that, is that people look at Kansas with Bill Self, right, that compete and win the Big 12 every single year. You know, Kentucky, now they've been up and down. They didn't even make the tournament. Right? But, you know, they're kind of a top 15, 20 team. They might not even be a good example. But Duke, right, compete for a conference championship every year. Michigan State competes for the conference championship every year, right? And I think, you know, Tom Crean takes the job, says it's Indiana, right? And we know there's going to be a 3-4-year transition period. Everyone's really patient. And then, you know, the turnaround kind of comes a year early. You know, Oladipo's sophomore year, we beat Kentucky's Elder's freshman year and make the Sweet 16. And last year, we're ranked number 1, and we win the Big Ten regular season title. And granted, we came up against, you know, a really tough matchup in Syracuse, another team that is top 5, top 10 every single year. And so I think you come out of last season and you go, okay, it's Indiana. We're the Hoosiers. We have 5 national championships. We're one of the winningest programs of all time. You know, we have a fan base that is used to competing in the upper echelon of the Big Ten with the NCAA tournament is a given. And are those expectations unreasonable? I mean, maybe, but are they unreasonable for these other blue blood programs? We expect to be in that echelon, okay? So if you then look at this team within that context, now, Ryan, to me, that's where the frustration comes in. Because I think a lot of people thought that we were past this, okay, now we're rebuilding and we're going to have this season where maybe we win 17, 18 games and, you know, it's kind of this rebuilding year and we're young. I don't hear Bill Self making those excuses. I don't hear Mike Krzyzewski and Tom Izzo and these other programs making these excuses. And look, I've been criticized because I said they should have put a banner up for the Big Ten title. I thought they should have put a banner up for the year before, the team that won the Sweet 16. You know, because to me that's such a great story of how that team exceeded expectations and brought this program back and we're back on the map. But that didn't mean that I was lowering the expectations because to me now the bar's back up there. That's what makes this season and what we're seeing unacceptable, I think, to me and some other people, is that I guess we thought we were a little bit beyond this, you know, that, look, you're competing for these top recruits and you're bringing them in. Well, you know, you figure out a way to work all of this together and you blend it with the experience that you have and you go. So you tell me what's out of whack. Are the expectations out of whack? You know, are we not back to that blue blood top five or six program, or is this team out of whack? You know, which one is it? Because there's a disconnect right now. There's a disconnect between expectations and what this team is capable of. I'm struggling to figure out where it is. Am I wrong for expecting more, or is this team wrong for not delivering more?
No, I think in general what you're saying is correct, but this year is different. And the reason why is because of what we lost. And very rarely do teams lose as much as we did and be competitive the next year. And by competitive, yeah. I mean competitive on a national scale. I mean, how many teams lose two of the top four picks in the draft who are underclassmen? I mean, that's not many.
Not many.
Yeah. How many teams lose four 1,000-point scorers? Very few. You know, usually when you see these teams that are perennial national contenders, they have guys returning who were part of the previous year. I mean, you know, Syracuse has DJ Fair and a few other guys this year. You know, we have Yogi and Will,
Ryan,
and that's it.
Ryan, you know what? No, you saying that makes me pine for last year again and feel like we underperformed expectations because that team was so rife with experience and the talent of youth, you know. But anyway, that's a conversation for another day, but go ahead.
No, and I'm with you. Don't worry. But, again, you know, these national programs typically have program guys, like with quotes around them, like Hulls and like, Elston,
yeah,
and Watford, who are constantly – who are still in the program when they lose those lottery picks. And so you've got guys to lean on. And this year we just don't have those guys to lean on. I mean, Yogi is a sophomore,
yeah,
who, frankly, he had a great season as a freshman, but he had a great season because he had so many other guys who could handle the ball and be relied upon and, you know, make it so he wasn't making freshman mistakes all the time. Or if he did make those mistakes, they weren't magnified. Now we've got he and Will, and we've always said about she's a great player, and he's a hustler, and he, you know, dives on the floor, and he plays defense and all that stuff. But he's also not the most consistent guy in the world, and that's not a great example for a senior to be setting, you know. And so I think that in general, yes, we should all expect to be in that top 10 consideration every year, but you also have to step back and look at this year specifically as an aberration and something completely different than what normally will be happening with this program. I mean, if you look at next year with all the guys we'll have coming back, you know, maybe Vonleh jumps to the NBA, but you have all those guys coming back, then you get to incorporate the top, you know, a phenomenal recruiting class. Then you set that course for what you're talking about, which is bringing guys back and then infusing that young talent, and then you've got the product of experience plus this high-level talent. Then the next year, I mean, I think we have, of our 10 freshmen and sophomores, I think at least 8 of them are 3 to 4 year players. And so you've got to have that program stability.
Right, but here's what people are looking at is if Noah goes pro and now Luke Fisher has left, granted, we may have the best backcourt in the country next year. I mean, literally, I'm not even putting that out as hyperbole. With Yogi as a junior, then you bring in James Blackman, and we all know what he's capable of. This team's backcourt next year, and then Stan Robinson is going to be phenomenal, but where are the big men? You know, now we're back to that problem where it's all guards and we don't have any big men. I think so here's the thing, Ryan, is I think people are starting to look at, you know, if you say that Noah's coming back next year, maybe you say, okay, you know, we're rebuilding a bit this year, and now we're ready for next year, but I think people are starting to look forward and even saying, you know, now, you know, is this program really ready to compete as the top 10 program every year? Are we going to start to yo-yo? You know, and I think that's what people are afraid of, and getting loss like this frustrates you. But I think it's even looking into the future and saying, you know, well, it's looking into the past and saying, man, we missed our golden opportunity last year, and now how do we get that kind of magic combination back? Because it doesn't quite seem to be coalescing.
Well, and this is why I thought that Fisher leaving was a horrible move on his part. Because if Vonleh does go pro, I think he's a guy they could have developed into not necessarily an all-Big Ten player, but a guy who was a linchpin of the offense and things like that. But as I've said on Twitter, I've talked to a lot of people, and he was just miserably homesick. And You know, he had to do what was best for him. If he was not enjoying his college experience, he needed to go elsewhere. I have not talked to a single person in the know who thought it had anything to do with basketball reasons. The kid was just homesick. And you know what? God bless him. I hope he finds a place he's happier. But, yeah, I agree. I think that without Fisher, things change a little bit. You've got Hauner. Maybe Pierre Jurkin develops into something. I don't know. But it also, you know, there's also a chance that if Noah's going to jump, then you have, and if we know Noah's going to jump, then you have another open scholarship for next year to possibly pursue a big man. There aren't a lot of guys out there at this point. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely would throw a wrench in things if Noah jumped. I've heard he's on a two-year plan, but I also, you know, that could also change with how well he played early in the season. I know he jumped up some draft boards. But maybe this Big Ten season will bring him back down to earth because it's not looking – he's not looking like the same guy he looked like, you know, 6 weeks ago. He's looking a lot more tentative. And right now I have zero confidence he could go to the NBA and score anywhere close to the basket. And I love Noah. I think he's a phenomenal player. I think he's the most talented freshman we've had in a long time. But I think that he really has a lot of work to do on his game to improve. So, again, like you said, if he comes back, it really changes the future outlook. And so we've got to sort of let that play itself out. But, you know, again, the point of building a program is bringing in as much talent as possible and then keeping that talent around. And Green did a great job of that for a few years, and it resulted in the last two seasons. And so but the problem was that, yeah, that team last year was top-heavy, and those guys left, and you've got what you've got this year where everybody's learning on the job. And so, again, fans just have to realize what they've got. I mean, you know, Chronic Hoosiers called it a season on the drink for a reason. This is what happens when young guys play a lot. You know, This is what happens. And that Kentucky team, everyone points to, well, Kentucky brings in freshmen every year, and they dominate. Well, frankly, they're bringing in freshmen who are there for, you know, 8 months and then go to the NBA, and that's the only reason they're in college. And frankly, I don't want our program turning into that. I mean, I love a national championship as much as anybody else, but I don't want our program turning into that. And the other thing is the year they did win with that formula, they had Anthony Davis, who was sort of like the Andrew Luck of low post players. I mean, he was incredibly special. And they leaned on him, and he took him to a title. So it's incredibly rare to do that with all freshmen. So
And they also had Michael Kidd Gilchrist, who was you know, kind of Old Depot-esque in his leadership by example. So I mean, that was a special
absolutely
group. No question about it.
It was, and that kind of having freshmen win you a national champion, all freshmen. There's a reason it really never happened before.
They had veteran guys provide leadership. I don't remember the names of the Deron Lamb, I think, and who was the other guy that came off the bench?
Harrelson.
I mean, they had some guys. They had some guys who provided leadership. So, all right, I don't want to belabor this too long. We've gone on for a while. Let me ask you this, and it's going to be a topic that's not going to stop. Let's talk a little Jeremy Hollowell here before we sign off, Ryan, because – you know, I like Jeremy Hollowell, and I don't like criticizing him, you know. And I think part of why I like our show, why I respect both you and Andy is, you know, we never get into criticizing, you know, the kid. I mean, we talk about their play, and we try and critique their play. You know, and I think, you know, I know that Jeremy Hollowell, you know, sometimes he doesn't quite look into it, and he looks a little sleepy at times. You know, but I think he tries, and I think he had a lot of expectations heaped on him as being part of the quote-unquote movement with Yogi and Hauner and Ron Patterson, who's now with Syracuse, and Jeremy Hollowell, and, of course, the ultimate irony is that the movement actually happened the year before with Victor and Will. But, you know, so many expectations were heaped on that class, and Yogi is going to be Yogi, and he's going to end up – whenever he leaves Indiana, we're going to look at that as he fulfilled – his expectations, for the most part, I think, you know, because he's shown that. And Hauner, I think, is kind of a project at this point. But Jeremy's been looked at as that guy who, man, there's talent there. And could he be the next Watford? Could he do this? Could he do that? And he just, you know, we're now midway through his sophomore year. and he just cannot seem to bring it against good opponents. I mean, when he, you know, I mean, I tweet out several times today, you know, can we institute a rule where he doesn't dribble? Because when he dribbles, bad things happen. He turns it over or he takes a bad shot and his three-point shot hasn't come around. And it just, it's not happening with him. And, you know, we're in this weird place where he was a top recruit and he's kind of one of the most experienced guys, but he's not earning the time. But do you give him more time because he's got this quote-unquote talent? Like, at what point do we just say, hey, we got to give guys like Troy and Stan, who they don't have the experience, but they're at least more athletic, and at least when they're active, more things happen. Like, they need to get those minutes, and Hollowell's kind of a lost cause. I mean, is he the kind of guy where at the end of his sophomore year, and again, tell me if I'm being ridiculous, but, you know, you say, hey, you know, you're not going to be able to live up to the crazy expectations you have here. And, you know, maybe if you go to a smaller school where the game is a little bit slower, you can thrive. Because I really want the kid to succeed. I like him. But when the speed goes up a half notch and the competition goes up, he's not able to compete. And it's getting frustrating for everybody to watch, and I'm sure no one more so than him. Because I don't think he doesn't try. Like, he does make, you know, you give him time out there, he'll get you some rebounds. He'll get you some assists. He'll do some dirty work. And I feel like if he focused on that and kind of focused on being a Devin Davis type guy, he could be successful. But he's Jeremy Hollowell. He's supposed to be able to hit outside jumpers and drive to the bucket and score. And he's caught between these two roles trying to figure out who he is. And I just don't know that he's ever going to find that in Indiana uniform. And, you know, and I'm concerned because I want the best for him. I mean, I want the best for the team, but I want to see all the individual guys succeed. And he's the one guy that just, man, it just doesn't seem to be coming together for him.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth in what you say. I think that part of his failings have been the expectations, I think, and maybe he's putting too much pressure on himself. But I also think that he's just not developing as we thought he would, and as pretty much every expert thought he would, and thought he would sort of fit into that old Watford role where he's a 6'8 guy who can play on the perimeter and occasionally post up and finish. And I think that you see him sometimes at his best when he's just, like you said, scrapping around the basket and, you know, gets a rebound, gets a putback, or gets fouled or something like that. Whereas, you know, most of his time is spent sort of outside the three-point line, maybe looking for a shot there. I don't know if the light will ever go on for him. I really hope it does because, like you said, he's got the talent. There's no question he's talented. And at his size, to be able to do the things that he can do is impressive. But, again, you know, if the light never goes on, I don't think that you ever force a kid to transfer, you know, or anything like that. But I think the coaches definitely have to sit down and have a talk with him about, you know, what do you want out of this? Do you want to be a basketball player? Do you? Because if you do, we need to figure out a way for you to harness this talent you have. Because if you don't, you're going to look back on the rest of your life and, you know, wonder what could have been. And but I certainly think that it's there and that he could, you know, tap into it. But it's really going to be on him to decide if he wants to be that guy and maybe shut off all the outside talk and just not pay attention to anything and certainly not read message boards and things like that because people are saying things and all that. And he just needs to shut that out and maybe go into Oladipo mode and just work. And if you work at it and work at it and work at it, you're going to get better. And maybe I'm not saying he doesn't work hard. I'm just saying that if it's really something he's having difficulty tapping into, and maybe he needs to go into that, you know, almost. I mean, what Oladipo would do, is the work he would do was ridiculous. I mean, I would never, if I was a coach, I would never suggest that to anybody because it was almost overkill. But you saw the result.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it might be one of those things where he just needs to get in that mode if he ever wants to be a basketball player. If he doesn't and he's just, you know, kind of wandering through his college career and you know, likes basketball but it's not his passion and it's not something he loves, then yeah, he needs to, you know, maybe it's going somewhere else, doing something different is what's right for him.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, I don't say that as part of this Machiavellian mindset that, hey, the guy's not proving himself, get him out, get a new recruit in. Cause I'd never felt like that. I was the guy who advocated for Matt Roth being able to come back at the expense of any recruit. you know. So I mean, I look at him and I feel bad because I just don't know that he's ever going to live up to the expectations. And when there's that gap there, you know, maybe a fresh start, you know, it'd be good for him. And you look at Maurice Creek and what he's done with his fresh start, and man, it'd be nice to have him playing here, you know. But would he have been able to do that here? You know, who knows, you know, what he's doing for Jordan Washington this year. And so, you know, I want to see the guys succeed, you know, and that's the one thing about this team is, and I don't know, I guess this is going to start getting into my final thought, but it's that, you know, the kids fight. I mean, they really do. They play hard. They fight. Goodness gracious, sometimes they look like they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off because they're turning the ball over. They don't know what to do. And that's where I think the frustration comes in with the coaches. But the guys really do fight and play hard, you know, and they care, and you can see that. You can see that with Will diving out of bounds. You can see that with Stan Robinson, you know, getting frustrated. And I don't know, the technical foul, whatever. You know, the kid was really having a really good second half. I don't have a big problem with that.
That was a weak technical call.
It was a weak technical call.
It was a very weak technical.
Yeah. And I thought that our kids really fought for about 32, 33 minutes today. And I almost felt like they kind of lost their attitude a little bit when the fan base did. And I don't think the coaches helped them. I put some of that on the coaches because, I'm sorry, when you play Johnny Marlin, a guy who hasn't earned the minutes, what message are you sending to your team? You know, is the message, hey, we're only going to play guys who are hustle, or we're going to cut off our nose to spite our face, and we're not going to try and win a game that's not out of reach yet? And so, you know, again, that was frustrating, but whatever. You know, these guys are playing hard. You know, we just want to see them have some success so that they're rewarded, because I think that's – and it's especially important with this young team, you know, because we've seen these young and experienced teams in Crean's tenure really fall apart late in the season, and I'm just afraid of that. You know, I'm afraid that we're going to get to February and this team is going to be sitting at 1-5 or, you know, something like that, and, you know, they're going to start losing their fight. We haven't seen that yet. We saw it a little bit at the end of today, but, you know, I personally, I'm putting the blame on that for the coaches because I thought their decision-making almost encouraged that kind of mindset, frankly, but whatever. This team needs to come back next Saturday and really fight against Penn State, and if they can get that win and fight themselves, you know, against Wisconsin to where it's just a close game, maybe we can start to build some momentum going forward. Anyway, with all that said, we've gone for longer than an hour. There's NFL games going, and, you know, I don't want to think about this game anymore. So, Ryan, let's go to you for a final thought. I'll give mine, and we'll let everybody get on with their day.
I think my final thought's sort of going to be what we've talked about for a while here, and that's just – and we've discussed it before. I mean, people just – I realize it's frustrating. It is a frustrating season, and you see the moments of brilliance with this team where you're like, oh, my God, they just got it. They got it. The light's on. We're good. And then they turn the ball over four times in a row or make stupid fouls or, you know, whatever. That is what this kind of team does. It is a young team, and it's something that is so much fun to watch at times because of their youth, their exuberance, their effort. Like you said, they never give up. I mean, they play extremely hard all the time, and that is a credit to the coaching staff. And like you said, there are some moves you could certainly criticize the coaching staff for. Don't get me wrong. But the fact that these guys are always playing hard and always diving on the floor and always running hard and things like that, they may not make the right decisions, but they're working. And I think that, more than anything, will pay off towards the end of the Big Ten season. It may not be something that leads us to the tournament or, you know, helps us, you know, this year. But the development of this team will lead into next year as I think this is a team that could really make some noise next year. So I realize this is a frustrating situation, and things are not fun right now, but got to take the long view with this team, and we've been preaching that all year, and I still think it holds true.
Now, I agree with you. It's a good point. You do have to take the long view, and, you know, I got a tweet from somebody today saying that he would, you know, he couldn't watch this anymore, and, you know, I know he told me later he was, you know, was just kind of a minute, because I retweeted back to him, hey, you can never give up on the team. You watch every game till the end. You know, shoot, just like 5 years ago, Crean's first couple of years, and we were horrible and had no hope of winning. You know, you support the team, because what makes this program special is the support that it has. And so don't forget that. Don't get spoiled to the point where there's no good, there's no joy taken in the 40 minutes that are out there. You know, I mean, the team is playing hard. They're doing some good things. There are some frustrating things, man. You know, the substitutions are frustrating. Some of the decisions our guys make are frustrating. Our inability to shoot is frustrating. The up-and-down nature of guys is frustrating. But, you know, these are college kids. Support them. That's part of what, you know, being an Indiana fan is always being there, always supporting, and we can critique and we can talk and we can, you know, kind of, you know, meet heads like we did today, and you have that frustration, but don't lose the faith. I mean, I'm telling you right now, the second half of this season, it could get ugly. I mean, we're 0-2. The Big Ten is really good. This team may not be ready to win some road games it needs to win. There could be some tough times. Keep the faith. We'll come here after every game. We'll break it down. We'll have a meeting of the minds. We'll talk it out. We'll release some frustration. But support these kids. You know, cheer them on when they play hard, because they do. And, you know, hey, we're all working towards banner number 6. It's going to come. You know, and the season isn't quite going how we all hoped. But, you know, just keep the faith. Keep the faith. Keep cheering on the cream and crimson. Keep showing up every game. And don't leave at any point until the buzzer sounds. And then when you do leave, come here. Check us out. SundayCall.com live. We'll be here. We'll be talking about the game. We'll try and express your frustration while also giving you some concrete analysis to go from. All right, now I'm just rambling. SundayCall.com/subscribe. Subscribe to our email list because we may be starting a few new things with Andy providing some day-after post-game advice that'll be fun. Other than that, we will be here after the next game, as we always are. The next game is Saturday, the 11th, against Penn State. That game starts at 12 o'clock Eastern, so 11 o'clock Central on the Big Ten Network, so it's an early game. That means it'll be over long before any of the NFL playoff games start, so you have no excuse not to be here. Make sure you're there, because we talked about Notre Dame as a must-win. This game was kind of termed a must-win. That is a must-win game at Penn State. We have got to get that victory, go to 1-2. Especially with number 4 Wisconsin staring us in the face on Tuesday with that quick turnaround. We got to get a win. Be here. You've seen those Bud Light commercials. Hey, if it works, it's not crazy. Everybody needs to be cheering. Put your lucky shoes on. Do whatever you got to do. We got to get this team a win. Pull together, not just as a team, but as a program. And as IU fans, you're all part of the program. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Rough game today. Indiana loses to Michigan State 73-56. Hoosiers are 10-5, 0-2 in the Big Ten. Need to get a win on Saturday against Penn State. That's all there is to it. Hopefully this team will be able to do it. All right, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday. We will talk to you soon. Talk to you on Saturday.